Alt NPR.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the all-new MDX with available real-time traffic monitoring. More information at Acura.com.
Hey, I'm Alan Baker, the Cellar Rat, and, well, I'm just barely keeping up. Okay, well, not so much, but I'm trying here. Give me a break. The Pinot Noir that I'm making this year is just about ready to start fermenting. So, big deal. Let her rip, I say. I mean, let's get this fabulous juice moving towards becoming a fabulous wine. But wait just a minute. All we really know right now is the sugar level, because I've been taking those measurements daily. One bin is a little bit over 26 bricks or percent sugar, and the other, well, a little bit under that. So there is some variation within the harvested fruit, which I would bet is a result of there being a different mix of Pinot Noir clones in each bin. And for those of you tracking the numbers on this stuff, the clones in the Wenzel Vineyard that we got fruit from are 667, 115, and 777, probably the three most popular Dijon clones planted recently. Anyway, other than the sugar level, which will determine the alcohol level of the finished wine, there are other important things to know, and it's important to know this going into the fermentation, because any adjustments you want to make to the wine should be made, if at all possible, before you ferment the juice. It's widely believed that making adjustments prior to fermentation yields a much more harmonious wine, and if it's anything in the world that we want right now, it's a little bit of harmony. It's common practice in France to add sugar to the must prior to fermentation because some regions can't quite get the grapes as ripe as they would like. Thus, the low sugars are modified by bumping that up a little bit prior to fermentation. But in the US, at least California anyway, it's much more typical that you add a little bit of water to dilute the sugars a bit. It's rarely a problem getting grapes to fully mature in this sun-rich state. So sometimes you get grapes that are just a little riper than you would like. And with our sugars testing in the 26 bricks range, we'll definitely be adding just a little bit of water, or we'll end up with a Pinot Noir that has an alcohol level of above 15%, which just ain't my thing. So I'm dropping in on Joshua Dilworth in the Crush Pad Lab to get an answer to an age-old question today. It's Ratcast number 59. Winemaking, art versus science, what is it?
I think it's definitely both. At this point in the process, you're going to have a good deal of science. So the process, this point right now, is the beginning. So the primary fermentation, we've got some things that are just about to start primary fermentation. We've got some vineyard samples, and there definitely is some science that's involved.
Okay, so what are the primary tests that you do to figure that all out? So going into fermentation, you know, you've got a balanced must.
Right. So there's three different experiments that we run with all wine that comes into the lab. And the wine could either be actually vineyard samples, so samples that are taken from the vineyard that someone in the lab is going to process, and by that I mean just crush and get juice from. Yep. Oftentimes it will look this color. This was actually some juice samples from a vineyard that just came in today. Mm-hmm. Then we'll also have numbers that we run on lots of grapes that have actually been destemmed and crushed, which is something that will usually look like this. And you can see there's been a little bit of settling out of some sedimentation. Yeah. And then we'll also run numbers after wine has gone through a bit of a cold soak as well, because oftentimes you're going to get a little bit more sugar that's going to be soaked up by the juice while it's sitting in cold maceration.
Yeah, so that's what happened with our juice. So we started off at 25-ish, and it came up close to 26.
Right.
And so now we're looking at doing all the treatments that we want to do before fermentation. So you did that using what gear do you actually employ to do this?
Well, it's pretty simple, ultimately. To measure bricks, we use a refractometer. Mm-hmm. So this is basically nothing more than physics. And there's a prism inside this little lens. And basically you have light that's shined through. And based on how much the light is bent, that can tell you exactly how much sugar is in the solution that is on top of the prism.
Okay. And then you've got scientific gadgetry here to do the rest.
We have a pH meter, so this is a pH probe, and This is basically just an instrument that I need to calibrate with certain buffers. So we set a range of all this. We set a range for this machine that says, you know, this is what we can tell you for certain. This is what pH 4 is with this liquid, and we can tell you for certain what pH 7 is with this liquid. And so once we calibrate the machine, then we can easily run all the pHs for multiple, for wine after wine, or wine sample after wine sample quickly.
Okay, that's pH and acidity. How do you do that?
Sure. Basically, the test for TA, total acidity, is ran with a few different chemicals. We use phenolphthalein, and that's actually the color indicator. We measure the amount of sodium hydroxide that it actually takes to change that solution from one color to another. And in this case, most of the time, it's actually, it's from clear to pink. However, when you're dealing with red wines, clear is sort of a little slightly orange, but you can always see the slight change to pink.
So at this point, we had our lab work done, and we decided we'd do a few things to prepare our must for fermentation. We added a bit of water to each tea bin so that our resulting wine would be in the 14.2% alcohol range, and we added a bit of acid as well, which in effect lowers our pH. Having a wine that is out of balance with a high pH is likely to give you a finished wine that seems flat or even flabby, and that is definitely not what we're going for. And I was going to inoculate both bins with cultured yeast to play it safe, but some of the Rat Pack group were very interested in what is called a natural yeast fermentation. Basically, it ferments with whatever yeast are on the grapes when they come into the winery, or whatever yeast they get from within the winery. So we decided to let one bin take off on its own and to inoculate the other after that natural fermentation got started. For the cultured yeast, I decided to go with the yeast that one Rat Packer said sounded like it was the address of a German proctologist, and we used Assmanshausen AMH, which is a yeast that is supposed to enhance the spicy characteristics of the wine, as well as have a controlled and slow fermentation, which is a good thing because Pinot likes to bolt for the finish line. And when you get to use terms like bunghole, I think Assmanshausen is the perfect yeast to accompany this wine through the process. And it's pretty simple, really. You start the yeast culture in warm water and let it sit for a while to get the yeast hydrated and happy. We also added some food for the yeast called GoFirm, which will help get the culture established. And then after 20 minutes or more, you add that culture to the must. And then you wait. So we will leave the happy little yeasties swimming in their new home and check back tomorrow, when we'll likely need to figure out a way to boost the temperature a bit to help kick things into high gear. You can find out more about the Pinot 2.0 project and this wine if you're interested in getting your hands on some at cellarrat.org. I'm Alan Baker, the Cellar Rat, and I will be back with you soon.
Alt.